somebody out of state received what appeared to be a very threatening set of plans to attack a school, and that was tracked back here to Alaska.
A student in Anchorage is arrested after an alleged threat against a school. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 21st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a legislative effort to help reduce student loan debt.
Some relief on the student loan amount would be a big help to our family.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Quality Inn and Suites on Spinard, providing lodging for Medicare patients in Anchorage with a 24-hour airport shuttle and a hot continental breakfast. Reservations at 800-221-7550. Get a career in less than a year in nursing or QMed or professional cooking and baking. Additional programs and course information online at avtech.edu. Classes in Seward and Anchorage start in January, so enroll now. This message sponsored by Avtech.
A possible attack was thwarted by law enforcement at an Anchorage school yesterday. Officials are being tight-lipped about details, but confirm that a tip from out of state alerted them that an East High School student was involved in an online plot to attack a school. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The alleged threat launched a joint investigation between the Anchorage Police Department and the Anchorage School District yesterday. Anchorage Police Chief Mark Muse says the case is still under investigation and involves a minor, so he can't discuss details. But he says the concern originated online.
There was a group of students here in Alaska and elsewhere in the country that were exchanging information via their computers, and somebody out of state received what appeared to be a very threatening set of plans to attack a school, and that was tracked back here to Alaska. We've contacted the student. We've made an arrest. He's a juvenile, so we're not going to identify him right now.
The student, a 15-year-old male, was playing online video games, officials say, with two other people from out of state. At some point, the Anchorage teen made a general statement about possible plans for a school shooting. One of the online youth told his parents, who in turn called the school principal and relayed their concerns. School resource officers launched an investigation which resulted in the arrest of the student.
One of the things we do want to point out is that we got on this thing so quickly because a student and some parents in another state took this thing really seriously and got in touch with the authorities here in Anchorage right away. And so I don't think we can say definitively yet whether this was a prank or whether this was something that was actually in the works. We're trying to sort through that right now.
Anchorage school officials are sending a phone message to parents informing them of the threat and ensuring them of school safety. This is part of the message that parents will be getting from Michael Graham, the principal of East High School.
Yesterday, we received information regarding a safety threat at our school. An East High student had told another student about potential plans for a shooting at our school. Although no specific threat was made, the student who heard the information told a trusted adult. When the school received the message, we took the information very seriously and immediately involved our school resource officers. The Anchorage Police Department took immediate action and worked quickly to divert a potentially dangerous situation.
The message also says the student involved in the safety threat is currently on emergency suspension pending expulsion by the school board. School district officials say the district is reviewing their emergency action plans in the wake of the Connecticut school shooting. The juvenile arrested is being held at McLaughlin Youth Center and faces charges of terroristic threatening. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Bells across Alaska rang at 9:30 this morning in memory of the 26 victims who were shot to death 1 week ago at an elementary school in Connecticut. There were 27 victims in total. The first was the gunman's mother, who was found dead in her home. The state capitol building bell was struck 26 times, and as it faded, church bells throughout Juneau could be heard. Governor Sean Parnell ordered the bell to be rung as part of this day of mourning declared by Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy, who called upon all Americans to observe a moment of silence at 9:30 local time while bells tolled around the country. 20 children, all 6 and 7-year-olds, and 6 faculty members died at the hands of a gunman on December 14th at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. State Capitol Custodian Supervisor Paul David Duran rang the Capitol building bell. It was a cold job, with temperatures in the low teens and howling winds.
Very proud to do it. I have three children, a two, a four, and a six-year-old. I only hope that nothing like that would ever happen.
Governor Parnell and First Lady Sandy Parnell were among the few dozen people who congregated for the Capitol ceremony. Alaska's Capitol building bell is a full-scale replica of the original Liberty Bell and was given to the Alaska Territory by the U.S. Treasury Department in 1950. It is rung at the governor's discretion. Congress is recessing until after Christmas without an agreement on staving off the so-called fiscal cliff. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Senator Mark Begich is not optimistic.
Late Thursday night, Speaker John Boehner canceled a vote on his alternative to President Barack Obama's plan to prevent tax increases and spending cuts January 2nd. That proposal, called Plan B, would have raised taxes on people making more than $1 million per year. Speaker Boehner learned he does not have the support of his own Republican Party in the House, so any plan will require Democratic votes and a number of willing Republicans. A visibly frustrated Senator Mark Begich says that's a steep hill to climb.
I give it a 30% chance that we can get something done before the year's out.
30%.
That's the best.
Senator Begich says he wants the House to take up a Senate-passed measure that would prevent taxes from increasing on households making less than $250,000 per year. That bill does nothing to prevent the spending cuts. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Earlier this evening, President Obama said he's optimistic a smaller framework deal can be reached after the Christmas holiday. Student loan debt is second only to mortgage debt in America, totaling to about $1 trillion. This is a serious financial hit for graduates, especially in a fairly weak economy. But some Alaska legislators are working to reduce the burden on students. APRN's Josh Edge has more.
Representative Les Guerra and six other Democrats are the primary sponsors of a bill pre-filed today that takes aim at reducing student loan debt for Alaskans. The initial intention was to reduce student loan rates by 3% if a student either stays in or moves back to Alaska after graduation. But Guerra says the Alaska Student Loan Corporation proposed an alternative of an annual 2.5% principal reduction.
The reason they prefer a principal reduction is it's much easier to administer with less staff. And so it's a cost savings, but it's the equivalent of a 3% interest reduction.
This means that each year, the Alaska Student Loan Corporation would chisel off 2.5% of the principal of a student's debt. Molly Towner is an Anchorage area teacher and single mother of two children. She went back to school to get her master's degree to become a teacher, and since graduating 6 years ago, Towner has been paying about $600 a month towards her student loans.
I feel very, very lucky compared to most of the world, but it is very tight, and some relief on the student loan amount would be a big help to our family.
She still has over 15 years left before her loans will be paid off. Guerra says student loans can be a deterrent for people looking to go to college.
We believe that money should never be a barrier to college, to job training, to vocational education. But in Alaska, the student loan rate hovers around 7%, when at the same time you can get a used car loan for 2.5 to 3%.
Guerra says if the legislation passes, the Student Loan Corporation will likely ask for an appropriation from the state to help fund the student loan reduction, though the amount is unknown at this time. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
To read the full text of the bill, go to alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Operation Santa Claus visits the Bering Sea Island community of Mikoryuk.
So we're getting to smaller and smaller, more remote communities. And out here on Nunavak Island, it's kind of hard to get more remote than where we are today.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The main prey of polar bears has been declared a threatened species because of diminishing sea ice due to climate warming. The National Marine Fisheries Service today declared ringed seals as a threatened species, joining polar bears on the list. The agency also placed a second ice-dependent seal, bearded seals, on the list. Ringed seals are the only seals that thrive under completely ice-covered Arctic waters. They use stout claws to dig and maintain breathing holes. Females give birth in snow layers to pups that are susceptible to freezing until they grow a blubber layer. Bearded seals give birth and rear pups on drifting pack ice. Sea ice this year melted back to record low levels. The small village of Makoryuk sits on the north side of Nunavak Island in the Bering Sea. The remote community often experiences harsh weather that prevents planes from coming or going, but this holiday season, the village got a special early visit from a certain famous North Pole resident. KYUK's Mark Earhart was on the island and has the story.
Reindeer can handle the cold, obviously. They live in the North Pole. But when Santa wants to make trips to see good boys and girls a little before Christmas Day, he elects to rest his trusty flying partners in favor of the next best thing, Black Hawk helicopters provided by the Alaska Army National Guard. It was quite a sight seeing Chris Kringle in a pilot's jumpsuit instead of his trusty red and white gear, flying out to Makoryuk to hand out his presents and take last-minute Christmas wishes. In the village, kids gather on the school's gym bleachers to sing songs like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in their native Chupigit. Once squarely on the ground, Santa and Mrs. Claus, masked in helmets, run into a back room to change, while elves and National Guard members set up in the gym.
What was it like coming over on a Black Hawk? A little bit different than the sleigh, huh?
A little bit different. Just as cold, though, I just want you to know. And I had a little bit of wind, just like when Santa takes me in the sleigh.
Santa was rather quiet, only mustering a few syllables while fiddling with his suit.
Ho, ho, ho.
He says it doesn't quite fit like it used to. Mrs. Claus says bringing presents, fruit, and ice cream to Makoryuk is something she and Santa felt they needed to do.
Sometimes they don't have any of this out here, so it's really nice for us to be able to come and bring something to them.
This trip is part of the Alaska Army National Guard's Operation Santa Claus. Put on originally by the Air Force, the operation has been a staple in remote Alaska villages around the holidays for 55 years. The gym is filled with neatly piled boxes wrapped in shiny paper, one for every child and a few extra just in case. Adjutant General Tom Katkus says the National Guard is more than happy to help Santa deliver presents.
So we're getting to smaller and smaller, more remote communities. And out here on Nunavak Island, it's kind of hard to get more remote than where we are today.
Katkus says using the helicopters allow them to get to places where weather usually limits planes. 30 miles off Alaska's west coast, Nunavak looks more like the surface of the moon with December's half-light peeking up from the frozen shore. This remote village is the last stop on Santa and the National Guard's statewide tour.
So we went to Vinatai first, then we went to Northway yesterday. It was minus 51 over in Northway yesterday. And then we were over at Amathlak also, just outside of Bethel. So we did four this year, and we got quite a bit of the range of Alaska from the Canadian border all the way out here to the west coast.
In the gym, kids line up to sit on Santa's lap to tell him exactly what they want for Christmas. Most here have only ever seen Santa on TV or read about him in books. Fifth grader Donovan Weston knows exactly what he wants.
BB gun, so I can go hunting with my dad.
Eighth grader Sunny Shavings wants a new iPod, though she's a little wary of old Chris Kringle.
He kind of freaks me out.
And why is that?
Because his beard looks fake and his beard looks real at the same time.
In Makoryuk, I'm Mark Earhart.
A new book by Judy Kleinfeld of Fairbanks explores a mythology often lived out in Alaska. The Frontier Romance looks at why people head north to carve out an existence off the beaten track. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The frontier has positive connotations across the American West, especially in Alaska. The state brags about being the last one. But Judy Kleinfeld says frontier has more forbidding definitions in other cultures. Kleinfeld, an emeritus professor of Northern Studies at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says Americans redefined frontier.
As the country developed, frontier came to mean the exact opposite of boundary.
It was this wide open space full of opportunity, possibility, and adventure.
Kleinfeld says Alaska's rugged country and low population set the stage for playing out the frontier story. Her book focuses in on what she calls the hidden people, who employ frontier mythology to head into the woods, hunt, trap, and live off the land. Kleinfeld says she was surprised at the motivation of what she calls mountain men.
They weren't doing it for the money. They often had to work in the summer to support their lifestyle. But they were living out the frontier myth, and to them it meant being able to prove up as a man.
Kleinfeld also details the often more complicated stories of wilderness women, as well as those of people who use frontier-style persona to mask evil.
Michael Silka, he's a perfect example. He came to Manly Hot Springs, and people, you know, thought they knew this frontier type, the kind who lived out of his car and wasn't quite sure about what he was going to do, and he made a camp for himself at the boat dock. Well, everyone started disappearing.
Michael Silka murdered 9 in 1984 before he was killed in a shootout with state troopers. Kleinfeld's book also explores the frontier mythology of communal living. She says Whitestone Farms near Delta Junction is a rare example of a long-lasting religious commune.
A utopian community where people share everything. They live in common. They live in dormitories, eat together, work together at their various businesses, which are quite successful due to their self-discipline and intelligence.
Kleinfeld says Whitestone Farms has maintained a population of over 200 since being formed as a reaction to the lax morals of the 1960s. She says it's one of several communal societies formed in Alaska and northern Canada, attracted here by open country. She says Alaska's frontier is being eroded, but still exists outside the state's developed areas. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Brianna Gibbs. This week on AK, Holiday Brass. Some of the nation's top brass musicians appeared in Sitka this week. The trumpeters, trombonists, and more performed Monday night at the community's Performing Arts Center. All 600 seats regularly sell out for the concert, which has become something of a holiday tradition in the Southeast community. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
The house lights are dim, the curtain is open, and from an arc of red chairs underneath the proscenium, the music begins. On one side of the stage, gold trombones reflect beams of light into the audience. On the other side, blurry fingers move trumpet valves as the music quickens. This is the Sitka Holiday Brass Ensemble, a dozen or so musicians, including several full-time professionals from symphonies across the United States. And they're rehearsing at the moment. The huge auditorium in front of them is empty. The musicians are not in their concert black. They're in jeans and sweatshirts and tennis shoes. They sip from cups of coffee and scribble notes in their music. Slower here, faster there. Let the tuba set the pace when you get to God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. And listen, just listen to the French horn solo.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Donna Parks. I'm currently the acting associate principal of the Utah Symphony.
Parks is a trombone player. She started at age 9 in her elementary school brass band in Australia.
The trombone was taller than me. I'm now taller than the trombone. But I was 9 when I started.
Her career has taken her across the United States and to London, Malaysia, Singapore, Sydney. But when she did a one-year engagement with the San Francisco Symphony, she met musicians who told her about a concert she should try playing in Sitka, Alaska.
I didn't know what to expect the first year because you put these groups together and people come from different places, different orchestras, and you never quite know how it's going to work. But the amazing thing about this group is it always gels incredibly well. And the musicians play very well together on a musical level, but it's also now become this really wonderful group of people. So we look forward to coming back and being together as friends and colleagues, which is almost as important as the music we make together now.
So you've kind of formed an ensemble here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's kind of turned into the beginning of the holiday. You know, I come up here and it's like, okay, now Christmas can start.
Yeah. That's tuba player Daryl Johnson. He used to play in the Louisville Symphony. Now he's freelancing in Seattle and playing in Portland. He and Parks both say there's something special about playing in Sitka.
And I'm always struck by this audience, and I mean that quite sincerely, that I play in a lot of different orchestras and groups across this country and overseas, and I'm really struck by the genuine appreciation this audience has. You know,
my first year, which was 3 years ago now, we got on the plane the next morning to leave, and you know, everybody on the plane was from Sitka, of course, and you know, they just applaud when we get on the plane. So he's like, you know, it's the one time I'm a tuba player and I get to feel like a rock star, you know.
This is the 9th year for the concert, which is a fundraiser for the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
But it's way more than that.
Roger Schmidt is executive director of Alaska Arts Southeast, the nonprofit that runs the Fine Arts Camp.
The community has really rallied to support our program year after year in a way that just leaves us all just feeling really humble and like we need to work hard in response to the gift that the community has given us to make the camp thrive. And so in many ways, this concert is kind of, it's really also a thank you back to the community. It's a way.
2 years ago, the Fine Arts Camp took over the campus of Sheldon Jackson College, which had closed in 2007. Since then, hundreds of volunteers have put in tens of thousands of hours rehabilitating the 20 or so buildings the camp now owns. But Schmidt says the holiday brass concert began long before the camp knew that it would take over the Sheldon Jackson campus.
I really wanted to do something special in the Performing Arts Center, and I had always my favorite group of musicians growing up as a kid. You know, we all have something we listen to. It was this brass ensemble called the Philip Jones Brass Ensemble, and it had 10 brass players. And so this was a chance to kind of go back to the recordings that I listened to growing up that inspired me to be a trombone player. That was the original idea. Was, wow, I can like form an ensemble that I've always dreamed of playing in.
And the night of the concert, Schmidt was on stage with that ensemble in front of a packed house, showing off the fruits of their rehearsal. For AK, this is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
For 300 Villages this week, we're heading just northeast of Sitka to another island community, Angoon. The village is home to about 450, mostly Tlingit residents.
My name is Richard George. I'm currently the mayor of Angoon. Well, today it's covered with snow. Chatham Strait is in front of us. We're located in a real nice spot. So it's pretty quiet. Hunting's coming to a close for the winter. We have people that go out deer hunting. We're getting to that time of the year when herring is spawning. So hopefully there'll be a good showing of herring this year. Angoon has no tax base. The employees that we have work for the school, you know, store, post office. Otherwise, our employment rate, I think, would be about 80%+, which magnifies the use of subsistence way of life. We have the mine company that employs a small amount of young people, and that is having some effect on our population, our young people moving to Juneau because of employment at Greens Creek, Huckel. The children in school, you know, the basketball season, so they're active with that. There are trips that they take, and a younger group is, you know, enjoy sliding around town more so than the adults.
Richard George is the mayor of Angoon. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ed Ronco, Annie Fight, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Brianna Gibbs.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Mark Earhart in Bethel, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Brianna Gibbs was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Josh Edge from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.